Chapter 3. Frankfurt. Back on 17 days leave, and everyone here very anxious to hear details of the Battle of Skagerrak. It is pleasant to have something to talk to the women about. Usually the gallant field greys hold the drawing room floor with their startling tales from the Western Front of how they nearly took Verdun and would have if the British hadn't insisted on being slaughtered on the Somme. It is quite impossible to tell that there is a war on as far as social life is concerned. There is a shortage of good coffee, that is about all. Arrived back on board last night. They have made a fine job of us, and we go through the canal to the Schillig Roads early next week. We are to do 3 weeks gunnery practices from there, to train the new drafts. 1916. About August. At last. Thank heavens, my application has been granted. Schmidt, the secretary, told me this morning that a letter has come from the Admiralty to say that I am to present myself for medical examination at the board at Wilhelmshaven tomorrow. What joy! To strike a blow at last, finished forever the cursed monotony of inactivity of this high seas fleet life. But the U-boat war? Ah! That goes well. We shall bring those stubborn, blood-sucking islanders to their knees by striking at them through their bellies. When I think of London and no food, and Glasgow and no food, then who can say what will happen? Revolt. Rebellion in England, and our brave field greys on the west will smash them to atoms in the spring of 1917, and I, Carl Schenk, will have helped directly in this. Great thought, but calm. I am not there yet, there is still this confounded medical board. I almost wish I had not drunk so much last night, not that it makes any difference, but still one must run no risks, for I hear that the medical is terribly strict for the U-boat service. Only the cream is skimmed. Well, tomorrow we shall see. Passed. And with flying colors. It seemed absurdly easy, and only took 10 minutes, but then my physique is magnificent, thanks to the physical training I have always done. I am now due to get 3 weeks leave, and then to Zeebrugge. I have wired to the little mother at Frankfurt. At Zeebrugge, or rather Bruges. I spent 3 weeks at home, all the family are pleased except mother, as he has a woman's dread of danger. It is pleasing in peacetime, but in days of war? To her, I believe I am of more importance than the fatherland. How absurd. While at Frankfurt I saw a good deal of Rosa. She is better looking each time I meet her. Moritz was home from Flanders. He had 10 days leave from Ypres, and though I have a dislike for him, he was interesting. Why the English cling to those ruins is more than I can understand. Moritz and I were rivals where Rosa was concerned. These women are the same everywhere. Entering the U-boat service made a difference with Rosa. But is that right? Here we live in billets, and in a commandeered hotel. The life ashore is pleasant enough. The damned Belgians are sulky, but they know who is master. Bissing, a splendid chap. Sees to that. As a matter of fact, we have benefited them by our occupation. The shops do a roaring trade at preposterous prices. Shamefully, the German shopkeepers are most guilty. These pot-bellied merchants don't realize they exist owing to our exertions. I was struck with the orderliness of the gardens we have laid out since 1914. Wherever one looks, there is evidence of the genius of the German race. These Belgians don't appreciate it. I can't understand it. Social life is gayer than at Wilhelmshaven. At the high seas fleet bases, there was strictness and austerity, though precious little war in the high seas fleet. Perhaps that was why the blood and iron regime was in full order ashore. Here in Bruges, as far as the submarine officers are concerned, the matter is different. When the boats are in, one does as one likes, with a visit to the ship in the course of the day. Witnitz, the Commodore, favors complete relaxation when in from a trip. In the evenings there are parties, for which there are always ladies, and I find it is necessary to have a dinner jacket. I went to the best tailor to buy one, and found that I must have one made at the damnable price of 140 marks. The fitter, an oily Jew, had the incredible impertinence to assure me it would be cut on London lines. I nearly felled him to the ground. Can one never get away from England, and things English? I'll see his account waits a bit, before I settle it. There are several fellows I know here. Carl Mueller, who was third watchkeeper in the York, and Adolf Hilfsbaumer, who was captain of G-176, are the two I know best. They are both doing a few trips as second in commands of the later UC boats, which are mine laying off the English coasts. This is a dangerous operation, and nearly all the UC boats are commanded by reserve officers, of whom there are a good many in the mess. Excellent fellows, but somewhat uncouth and lacking the finer points of breeding, they keep themselves to themselves. I certainly don't wish to mix with them. Unfortunately, it appears that I am bound to be appointed as second in command of one of the UC boats for at least one trip before I go to the periscope school and train for a command of my own. The idea of being bottled up in an elongated cigar and under the command of one of those nautical plow boys is repellent. However, the Von Schenks have never been too proud to obey in order to learn how to command. I have been appointed second in command to UC 47. Her captain is Max Alton. I had seen him drunk one night in the mess. I reported to him. He seems rather in awe of me. His fears are groundless. I shall make it as easy as possible for him, for it must be as awkward for him as it is unpleasant for me. To celebrate my proper entry into the U-boat service, I gave a dinner party last night in a private room at Le Coq d'Or. I asked Carl and Adolf, and told them to bring three girls. My opposite number was a lovely girl called Zoe. We drank champagne, and had a pleasant debauch. The girls got merry, and I kissed Zoe once. She was not very angry. I think she is charming, and have accepted an invitation to tea at her flat. She is either the wife or the Jeremiah of a colonel in the Brandenburgers, I could not make out which. Luckily the gallant cockchafer is at the moment on the Le Bassee sector, where heavy fighting has broken out today. I must console the fair Zoe. Both Carl and Adolf got drunk, Adolf hopelessly so, but I, as usual, was hardly affected. I have a head of iron, provided the liquor is good, and I saw to that point. We were going down the canal to Zeebrugge on Friday, but the starting resistance of the port main motor burned out, and we were delayed till Sunday. The organization for repair work here is admirable. All work is carried out by the permanent staff, who are quartered at Bruges docks. Taking advantage of the delay, I called on Zoe Stein. She is not married to Colonel Stein. She told me he was fat and ugly, and laughed a good deal about him. She showed me his photograph, and certainly he is no beauty. He must be a man of means. He has given her a charming flat, beautifully decorated with watercolors, which the colonel salved from the French chateau in the early days. These army fellows had all the chances. I bade farewell to Zoe. I trust Stein will be still engaged at Le Bassee when I return in a fortnight. I am obliged to Carl for the introduction, and told him so. He is running after a grass widow whose husband has been missing 4 months. I think Carl finds it an expensive game. Luckily Zoe seems well supplied with money, the essential ingredient in a joyous life. On Friday night we had an air raid, a frequent event here, but my first experience. Unpleasant, but a fine spectacle. Considerable damage done near the docks, and an unexploded bomb fell in a street near our headquarters. Two machines, British, brought down in flames. I saw the green balls known as flying onions for the first time. A fascinating sight, to see them floating up in waving chains into heaven. They remind me of making daisy chains as a child. Diary of a U-boat commander.